Welcome to My Measure. I'm Billy Howard. Ronnie Cooler is a pianist, accordionist, and violinist who performs regularly with Theater Ublek, Zephyr Dance Ensemble, and the circus punk marching band Mukapatsa. In addition to performing, Ronnie also composes music for her many ensembles. She has also released an album of solo and duo music in collaboration with Daniel Joseph Dorf. Here is a piece titled Tube Sock Tango that Ronnie wrote for Mukapatsa's album Safety Fifth.
By Measure. This is Ronnie.
Hi.
I was wondering if you have a daily routine for creating or practicing, or if you're more just like do whatever you feel like that particular day.
I have no routine and no self-discipline.
Join the club. But you still get a lot done, and you're always performing, and you're working on a recording now.
I'm working on recording some of my solo material, which is good because it feels like something tangible is actually being mm-hmm. created. I mean, tangible, you know, recording something
yeah.
that I've made.
Yeah.
Not totally sure yet what I'm going to do with it once it's recorded, but mm-hmm. feels good just to have the documentation of it, if nothing else.
So did you make a deadline, like, oh, I'm recording now, so I have to get stuff finished, or did you finish stuff first?
I developed a lot of work leading up to my Hideout residency in October that I just never recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I should probably record it before I don't like it anymore.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That was kind of the deadline I was up against.
Yeah.
I also found myself recently doing a lot of arts admin work, which is not something that I do well, mm-hmm. but it has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing enough of it that I sort of forgot what it felt like to actually make anything and feel like a musician. So
So
that's why I set up some recording dates and made myself remember my own songs. And
yeah, well, that's good. Where are you recording?
Recording at Sherwood. Oh, man. So it used to just be called Sherwood Conservatory, but then it got eaten by Columbia, and then the name changed a bunch of times. And I believe that the current name is Sherwood, : the Community Music School at Columbia College, Chicago.
And you teach there as well?
I teach there. I teach mm-hmm. in the early childhood department there. It's a wonderful place. I love being a part of Sherwood. And they have a really nice recital hall with a really nice 9-foot Kawai grand piano that I get to play, mm-hmm. which just is really important for feeling like I'm having fun playing music, is to be playing a beautiful instrument.
Yeah. Do you feel that same way about, like, your accordions and your violin if you play? Do you like to play on lots of different pianos, which I guess is a pianist thing.
It's
because
a pianist
you can't move your piano around with you. Most pianists can't afford to, but do you feel that way about, like, your accordion or other instruments that you play? Like, you sought out, like, the premier instrument that you want to be playing?
Well,
it's also a budget issue.
I mean, it is kind of a piano-specific situation to be like, oh, man, this piano is so juicy. Like, mm-hmm. it just plays like butter. It's so fun.
Yeah, yeah.
With my violin, like, I only ever play my violin. Mm-hmm. I don't ever play another one. So mm-hmm. I feel like we have a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a good, solid, exclusive relationship, mm-hmm. you know. And then with my... I do have 8 accordions.
Oh, wow.
At last count, I think I have 8. Most of them, or like a bunch of them, are out on like extended or permanent loan to mm-hmm. friends of mine. And then there's one that lives at Sherwood that I play sometimes in my classes, mm-hmm. and a couple that I use for Mukopata, mm-hmm. and one that lives at my house.
So it's sort of like a piano where you don't have to lug your accordion around too much?
Only,
you leave them
places. Yeah, I've kind of worked it out so that I have an accordion in every port, and more or less. Except when I play Muka shows, then we have to take everything with us, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah, each one of them has its own quirks, its own mm-hmm. defects and personality. And,
yeah.
And yeah, they're fun. There's so many variations in tuning and key size and everything that it's. I don't know. I like being able to go back and forth between them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so accordion isn't really a popular instrument in the 21st century. How did you get into playing accordion to begin with?
I started hearing accordion music in my head. This is a story that I've told before, but it is true. It is actually true. and so up to that point, I had been a pianist and a violinist. And I realized that probably this signaled that I should get my hands on an accordion, so I did. And I bought a really, really pretty blue one. It's a Galanti. Got it in Tel Aviv. Thanks, Dad. Got it for me. And it's beautiful. It's still my most beautiful mm-hmm. accordion.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh man, I should have taken it out when we were in my house. It's the one that lives in my house.
Yeah.
But it's got a really pretty musette. It's an mm-hmm. Italian musette accordion. Mm-hmm. So it has 2 reed sets that are tuned about 15 or so mm-hmm. cents off from each other. So like what you were saying about the organs, like there's a beating. It's mm-hmm. like a tremolo effect.
Oh, okay.
That's really, really fun to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Not always so easy to play, like depending on what other instruments you're playing with, mm-hmm. it won't match or makes it hard for other people to play with. But
they have to tune to you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was kind of how I acquired one, I guess. And then it kind of sat around for a while. And then I didn't really learn how to play it until I started playing in Mukupatsa, when I just had a lot of songs that I needed to learn. And,
yeah.
And so I did.
Did you take lessons or are you self-taught?
I did. I took 3 or 4 lessons from a fellow named Rob Cruz, who I owe an eternal debt of gratitude to, because he then referred me to Mark, who called me to come play waltzes in the park with Muka.
So, yeah, and then the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Yeah. When you write your own music, you don't write your own lyrics, and I was wondering how you go about finding lyrics that you want to use, or if you find the lyrics first and then write music to them, or vice versa.
Great question, Billy.
Thank you.
The first thing that I ever did where I tried to do anything with words and music, because before I had just written instrumental stuff, was with a theater oobleck show called Baudelaire in a Box, which is a project which aims to turn the entire Les Fleurs du Mal by Charles Baudelaire into cantastoria by the year 2017, although I think they've pushed their deadline back at this point. And so all of the poems are getting set to music, and they're having making illustrated scrolls to depict the action of the poem. So I was asked to be a part of this project, which was a huge honor and terrifying challenge. But I picked, I read through the whole Les Fleurs du Mal, and I picked the 5 poems that I thought were both the least horrendous, because they're pretty, they're pretty dark. And the most singable. And I decided to keep them in French because I kind of sort of speak French and my pronunciation's all right. And as soon as you translate something, the rhyme scheme is gone and the form is, you know, things change.
Yeah.
So it's actually a lot easier, I think, to try to sing poems in their original language if possible. So I just read them a lot. Like, I would just take each poem and read it a lot until it started turning into a melody. Sometimes I would record myself reading it and listen back to it. See what inflection my voice was making as I was reading the words. Or just like read at the piano. I did a lot of that. I don't know. I don't really have any further comments on like how it happened. It just was like spending a lot of time with the text.
But now you also write songs, I think, Edna St. Vincent Millay.
Yeah, I really like her, and I figured out that she said most of the things that I would say if I were good with words.
Yeah, I understand
I'm really grateful for her that she did that. So, yeah, same thing, pretty much just, like, reading the sonnets that I liked a lot. Over and over while sitting at a piano and like starting to noodle while reading them out loud. And
yeah. Do you think you'll ever write your own lyrics?
Nope.
That's good that you're so decisive. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really have a way with words, which is something that may or may not become completely apparent during the course of this interview.
Oh, I doubt that. Well, I took photographs of your two, you have 2 separate workspaces. You've got a nice little area with a piano in your home, and then you've got a separate space in an art center. What do you like the most about your workspaces, or what are the most important things for you to have in your workspace?
A piano that's really fun to play is crucial, super important. And I have in my Kimball Arts office, I have my Rhodes, which was a beautiful birthday present that I got a long time ago, which has served me very well. And it's nice to have it parked in a place where I can play it. Because when I'm at home, I pretty much just play my piano. So having this here means that it gets played more. So at home, I live by myself, so it's a pretty good, like, solitary workspace. If I want to just play and not have anyone listen except my unwilling neighbors. But the Kimball Arts Center spot is great because it's a shared workspace. My desk is next to Mark Messing's desk. And then there's other brilliant people who work here. The Manual Cinema folks mm-hmm. share the space as well. And it's also in the same area where Mukopatsa rehearses, so mm-hmm. that's convenient. Mm-hmm. I end up coming here and working sometimes when mm-hmm. I didn't plan to, because I'm like, oh, I'm already here. I was here for a rehearsal. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to stay and do something.
Or it's so, I feel like sometimes when you have a rehearsal, you get really inspired. And I don't know if you feel that way. And then you want to play a little bit more after a rehearsal mm-hmm. or something. And it's nice to have like a quiet space to do that.
It is nice, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's also nice to have a place to put my stuff down during a Mukopatsa rehearsal where I know I'll be able to find it later.
How many people are in Muka these days?
These days, something like maybe 26.
And do you all rehearse together, or is it whoever can make it?
Rehearsals have always been kind of whoever can make it. Mm-hmm. We go through phases where fewer people can make it, and then it starts to get a little like, oh man, same 8 people every week. Yeah. And then we go through phases where we get really excited about something and we have like almost full attendance at mm-hmm. a rehearsal, and that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Thanks for reminding me to send an email out to Mukopatsa to come to rehearsal this Sunday. Yeah.
Do you have any other big projects that you're working on besides your solo recordings that you're doing, but are you doing anything for Mukopatsa?
Mukopatsa is currently finishing up a record. We recorded mm-hmm. everything for it. We're just got like a couple more overdubs to do, and we're looking at a October Halloween-ish release.
Oh, that's exciting. Date.
So yeah, mm-hmm. it's a lot of songs that were generated during the Sitting in Chairs project that we did at Revolution. Mm-hmm. We wrote a whole new set for that. Mm-hmm. And so it's exciting to have that stuff recorded. Some really,
since it was
really good tunes.
For rather than like your bombastic performances that you did these Sitting in Chairs performances. Mm-hmm. Do you find that the music and the arrangements are a lot different compared to normally what you normally put
some
out?
Some of the songs have made their way into the regular old jumping mm-hmm. up and down set.
Yeah.
They're versatile enough that they work in both contexts. Some of the songs are really geared towards the sitting down and having a music stand mm-hmm. performance because they're just much harder. Yeah. The arrangements are more complex and really, really good music. It's, mm-hmm. That project gave us a chance to concentrate on musicianship even more mm-hmm. Than we already always do. Yeah. Did I answer the question?
Yes.
Great.
Do you have any tips for memorizing music? I just thought of this since when you play shows, you're probably most of the time playing from memory. Mm-hmm. How do you tend to memorize really easily, or do you have to really work at it?
I tend to memorize really easily. For the most part. There's one song that I had an endless amount of trouble with that Jeff Thomas wrote a few years back called The Monster Tango, which I, for some reason, it was one of those, the time signature changes mm-hmm. every couple bars situations. Yeah. So that one I had trouble with. But yeah, for the most part, I've always been pretty mm-hmm. lucky in being able to memorize things without working on it too much.
Well, that's good. They say that people are either really good at memorizing things or sight reading. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're not as good at sight reading then because you're so good at memorizing?
I feel like I'm decent at sight reading depending on what instrument I'm playing and mm-hmm. the time of day or night. And
yeah.
whether my contacts are falling out of my eyes or not.
Yeah.
But I'm terrible at memorizing people's names. Mm. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
I just read a tip for that when you meet someone new, think of someone else who has that name. And then you'll remember. Somehow this makes it easier to remember.
I'm going to try that.
I'm going to try it too because I'm also the same way. I'll meet someone and then within 5 minutes, it's gone. Are you the same way?
The same way. Yeah. It's usually even faster. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like during a conversation. The same conversation, I forget.
It's almost like during that moment when they say what their name is, everything goes dark for a second, and it's like I hadn't heard it at all.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Well, since you perform in Mukopatsa and all sorts of different ensembles, I was wondering what is the strangest place or context or time of day or something like that that you've ever had to perform for an audience?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I have to pick one?
Or tell us a couple.
Okay. well, I mean, in the context of a Mukopatsa show, I mean, we've played shows in canoes on the Chicago River. Mm-hmm.
We've in played an actual canoe and not
actual not, canoes. Wow. Yeah.
How many people per canoe?
Two. Two okay. per canoe, I think. There's photographic evidence of this, okay. so we can check later. There's actually a lot of water-based situations that mm-hmm. Mukopatsa has performed in that were noteworthy. In Dawes Park in mm-hmm. Evanston, we played around this lagoon that we, at the end of the show, fell into.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully not with the instruments.
Oh, some of the instruments can take it.
Oh.
Yeah, only the brass.
The brass,
yeah,
that makes me brass. So nervous, though.
we played another park in Evanston, James Park, during the end of the world. It was that hailstorm June of 2011,
yes.
I think. So Mukopatsa was playing a show in a park while while the storm was gathering, and there's photos by C.B. Lindsay of this mm-hmm. of this performance where it looks like there's no one else in the park. Like mm-hmm. it looks like it's just us mm-hmm. with like the darkest storm clouds that yeah. you can imagine, and it looks amazing. And we just kept playing. It was so gratifying to know that if the end of the world happened, like if we were the orchestra on the Titanic mm-hmm. and the ship you was going down, playing. We would keep playing. Mm-hmm.
Is that the concert where there are beautiful pictures of a rainbow afterward?
I think that was one of the few times where Mukopatsa did not create a rainbow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Failed.
But usually, mm-hmm. we make rainbows. Mm-hmm.
That you should put that on your resume or something.
That's a good idea.
Add that to your CV. Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of resumes... You recently received a large grant last year, and I was wondering how important grants and residencies and things like that are for you as an artist.
Another excellent question. That big grant that I got, the Three Arts Award, for which I am super grateful, I still am flabbergasted by it a little, and it's the first thing I've ever gotten like that, mm-hmm. so it's not something that I've ever... like depended on or expected. Mm-hmm. Since then, I also got through Three Arts and the Alliance of Artist Residencies. I got myself a Ragdale residency for some time in 2015. I haven't picked my month yet, but at some point in mm-hmm. 2015, I'm going to have a month with a studio in a mm-hmm. meadow to just work on mm-hmm. composition, which is going to be so amazing. But I've never done it before, so mm-hmm. I don't really know. What to expect. I've heard from other people that they get a lot done during mm-hmm. residencies. Like, it's equivalent to, you know, a few...
like, probably 6 months.
Months to a year of, like, of other kinds of time. Mm-hmm. Because it's so concentrated.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you will apply for more grants and residencies in the future?
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. I will, because so far I've had a decent success rate.
Yeah, exactly. So would you say it just, like, opened up a whole new world that you didn't think about before?
It has, and it's sort of changed the way that I think about what I'm doing mm-hmm. on Earth, you know, mm-hmm. where before I probably would have defined myself primarily as a teacher, which mm-hmm. is still really important to me, mm-hmm. and I spend a lot of time doing that. But
now you feel confident as an artist because yeah. other people see it too.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah, it's very validating.
That reminds me, I've interviewed a few people for the podcast now, and a lot of them asked, I have a question to ask you after this, but a lot of them said that a question that they would want to ask another musician is, like, where do you get the nerve, or why do you do what you do? But then immediately after saying that, they felt like, oh, maybe that's a jerk question to ask somebody.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, exactly. But I found that interesting that, like, established artists and musicians are thinking that about themselves a lot. So maybe the, like, having this outside, you know, grants and things coming through, do you feel like you've been more working more since receiving the grant, or?
I feel like I've been more disappointed in myself when I'm not working.
Yeah, that too.
Not necessarily like I've gotten anything more particularly done than I would have, mm-hmm. but I feel like I should be working.
Yeah.
So it's been really nice to have someone other than like my parents and my friends say that they like the stuff that I do. Makes it seem like I should be making more of it. But it doesn't make me feel like any less of a charlatan or a fraud.
You know? Okay. Oh, well, that's too bad.
I don't know if that ever really goes away.
Yeah. Well, that's the sense I got from the other people who said that. Like, they're constantly questioning their work and its place in the world, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But I guess that's good. It keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
So maybe besides that question, what is a question you would want to ask another musician that you feel that musicians don't get asked very often?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Or like, is there a someone that you really look up to that you have this question that you're dying to ask them?
Well, I guess I would really like to ask Mark Messing when lunchtime is.
Are you hungry?
Not yet, but I just want to know how to like time out the rest of my afternoon.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry. I actually don't know. Just off the top of my head.
It's a tough question. Yeah. Well, if you think of something, you can let me know and I'll put it in text at the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
My last question is, where can we find your music and find out more about you if we want to look, see a performance or something?
You can always find me the first and third Thursday of every month at the California Clipper, mm-hmm. at 9:30 p.m. I accompany Tom Music. Mm-hmm. He's my favorite singer, and I get to play his songs with him playing piano. Which is one of the funner things I can imagine doing. And it's free, so you're all invited to that. And I have a website, which I will remember to update today, mm-hmm. which is my name, ronniecooler.com, that has more information, links to music, upcoming mm-hmm. performances, and so forth. Yeah, those are two good places.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being on By Measure.
Yeah, thanks, Billy.
The song Alto Cumulus off of Ronnie Cooler and Daniel Joseph Dorff's album The Quilt Box Sessions. To view photos of Ronnie's workspace, visit bymeasure.blogspot.com.